Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting from the City of Arroyo Grande for Tuesday, July 22nd. And this evening, the City Council is also meeting as the City's Redevelopment Agency. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Costello.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Fellows.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here. Before we get into the rest of the agenda, I would like to make an announcement regarding a special meeting that was held prior to this session. Council was in closed session discussing legal matters, and we have no report at this time. Item 3 on the agenda is our flag salute. We're pleased to have Ann McCracken here from Arroyo Grande Valley Kiwanis to lead us in the flag salute tonight. And if you would, please remain standing for our invocation. Pastor George Lepper from Peace Lutheran Church is here to do that for us this evening.
Good evening. I also have with me tonight Maria Kindig, very much involved in Arroyo Grande in Bloom, I must say. Place your hand over your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let us pray. Father in heaven, we ask that you bless our council meeting tonight, grant wisdom to our leaders and the decisions that they make. Help us, Lord, as we serve you and be with our firefighters, our police officers, and our city workers, then guide and protect them. We thank you especially for watching over our EOS firefighters as they help battle the fires in California. Help us to work together to make our city a better place. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor. Appreciate that. And don't walk away. You have to tell us about Kiwanis. You're not getting out that easy.
We're having a ball with Kiwanis. We're gearing up for the car show this weekend, and I hope you will all come down and take a look at those gorgeous cars. We're going to be putting on a tri-tip barbecue lunch, and that will start, or we'll start early with coffee and all that, but then we've got the lunch. So come on down for lunch. And of course, we're also gearing up for the Arroyo Grande Harvest Festival, which is huge for us. We put on the parade every year. We also have one of our members putting on Grandma's and Grandpa's skillet toss. We've got everybody's involved in it. And so come on down and get involved with the community. And I encourage all of you to come to the car show this weekend. Thank you. I just came from the Batman movie. I'm kind of fired up. Thanks. Bye.
Good. Thank you. Okay, that takes us to item 5, special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 6 is agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. That will take us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and present to the council any suggestions, recommendations, comments on items that are not related to items on the agenda this evening. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters not published on the agenda. We would ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as one body. Anyone like to come forward for public comment, feel free. If you could state your name, please.
Holly Ziegler-Hagen, and I live at 420 Woodland Drive in Arroyo Grande. And I've prepared a simple one-page synopsis of the concerns that my husband and I both have regarding the proposed Mankins Acceleron, LLC, identified as DRC 2008-00222, which is a conditional use permit to establish 4 oil wells in Wasna Valley. But the most important part of our concerns are the transport of the heavy crude oil, which is proposed that would come through our city. So I've enumerated at least 11 concerns, and I'll just briefly enumerate them so that they can be sort of put into the minutes of tonight's meeting. As we all know, those of us who have, I've been a resident for 30 years in the city of Arroyo Grande, and and really treasure the environmental quality that we have. And knowing that we already have a heavy traffic situation through the village, the potential of 16 trips of 8 hauling loads per day with a composite of 4,000 gallons of heavy crude oil, which is even described by the Acceleron company as like heavy tar, heavy liquid tar. And that would be coming through our city 8 times a day for a total of 16 trips. And so that would exacerbate existing traffic congestion. And to me, that's a huge consideration for the village commercial people as well as the residents here who enjoy the quality of life. It's already gotten bad, but this would make it extremely serious. Moving down to number 3, the crude oil, of course, is considered hazardous waste material. If there were to be any kind of road spill, and we know that accidents happen, if there were to be any spill of any kind, there would be a huge hazardous waste problem to clean up. And I question also, in the proposal that is before the city, as I understand it, is there any mitigation for, if there were a spill, who would clean it up, at whose cost, and how would we mitigate all the ramifications of a hazardous waste material on any of the city streets in Arroyo Grande? Another concern of mine is that there is no sunset clause in this proposal, which means once granted, it would be actually granted in perpetuity to the people who are requesting this permission. And so I don't know if that's been addressed or acknowledged by the group, but I think that's something serious that we should address. Also, the trucks being heavy commercial trucks, probably single and double axle trucks, which they propose to come through the village, either the village or down Branch Mill and Cherry, would be constrained to operate between the hours of 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., except during times when school buses are in operation. So that would constrain the operation of these hauling trucks into very small time frames. And then the question arises, well, okay, if those constraints are in place, who is there to enforce those constraints? Is there going to be a police officer standing somewhere on watch, or is there going to be a city person, employee, watching to see who is rolling down the streets and at what times? And so then, you know, what kind of penalties would be enforced if that were a problem? I don't think there is any way to put a price tag on the environmental quality that is already involved with our city and that we're so proud of. So I really can't, personally, and my husband and I both don't see a way that this could benefit.
And we will take this and follow up and look into it.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you so
appreciate
much
it.
For your consideration.
Okay. We appreciate you bringing this to our attention.
Thank you.
Thanks. Anyone else who would like to come forward?
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Eddie Alhecto. I operate business 121 East Branch, and I'm here tonight to say thank you, actually. I was gone out of town for a while, and while I was gone, I was informed that somebody tagged my building. So our beloved chief of police called me, and I don't know what he did, but he recruited his wife, climbed the roof, and clean it up. And I think that was above and beyond. We really appreciate that. I want you to know how grateful we are, because I've never seen any police chief do a graffiti buster on the side. I don't know if that's a part-time job. No, it's not. I'm joking. No, it was very, very, it hit us really in a such a way that we are very grateful for that. And especially Dorothy and I, to see someone, an employee, and yet taking his time to go ahead and do such a service to the community and care so much. He hates graffiti, so am I. And congratulations for hiring such a gentleman. And with his lovely wife here in our community. We love him, and thank you.
Thank you, Eddie. It's actually in his job description, but it's in the fine print. Yeah. Anyone else who would like to come forward during community comments? Okay, seeing none, we'll close item 7 and move to item 8, which is our consent agenda. This is normally a group of items that the council approves in one action, unless there are individual items on the consent agenda that a member of the council would like to pull for further deliberation, clarification, or independent action. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on any item on consent. And this evening we're talking about, if you're following along on the agenda, we're talking about consent items 8A through 8I. So at this time I'll open any public comment on the items of consent. Once again, 8A through 8I. Anyone would like to come forward? Okay, seeing none, we'll close community or public comment on the consent agenda and bring this back to the council. Obtain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8I.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Anything to read in there this evening, Tim?
No, Mayor Farrar.
Okay, roll call, please.
Council Board Member Costello?
Yes.
Council Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Council Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Farrar?
Yes, thank you. That will take us to item 9, public hearings. 9A is consideration of an introduction of an ordinance repealing Chapter 2.28 of Title 2 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code regarding the Senior Advisory Commission. Good evening, Doug.
Good evening. Happy to be here tonight. I don't see our senior advisory commissioners here, but before I get started, I would like to mention that, you know, we've had an outstanding commission over the last, 18 years. I'm kind of sad to see it potentially go, but I would like to acknowledge we've had some outstanding commissioners before I get started. It's recommended that the City Council introduce an ordinance repealing Chapter 2.28 of Title 2 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code to disband the Senior Advisory Commission. No funding is provided for the Senior Advisory Commission, so the impact on finances is pretty minimal. There will be a little bit of savings in staff time for mailing, producing agenda packages, and administering some of the meetings. Give you a little history and background. The Senior Advisory Commission is actually initially established in 1989 to advise the City Council on issues including unmet senior transportation needs, senior affordable housing, and senior activities and services. The Commission played an important role for a long time, actually advising the City Council regarding the mobile home rent stabilization ordinance, senior housing, a subsidized senior taxi program, and establishment of a senior center in Arroyo Grande. However, over the years, the mobile home rent stabilization ordinance has been repealed. Senior housing developments have been built within the city, including the Coelty Court and Wyndham Residence over on Elm Street, the Ocean Oaks Senior Center over behind Walmart, and the Cortina de Arroyo Grande at Grand Avenue and Cortland. In addition, the senior taxi program has been replaced by the Ride-On Senior Shuttle, which is not administered by the city, and the Ocean Oaks Senior Center has been open, providing recreational opportunities and socialization opportunities for our seniors in Arroyo Grande. June 2007, the commission established their own criteria for meeting as needed as opposed to quarterly or monthly. However, due to lack of agenda items, we haven't even met since June 7th when the commission established a new criteria for meeting as needed. In addition, there are three vacancies on the commission, so if we wanted to meet, we don't have a quorum. I should add that I met with the two remaining senior advisory commissioners. Neither felt there's really any compelling reason to continue with the commission, so I thought that the council should be aware of that. Also, staff feels that the Parks and Recreation Commission can advise the council on issues to do with senior citizens now. In addition, there is already an ad hoc committee that's been established to suggest activities and programs at the Ocean Oaks Senior Center. And if necessary, staff could introduce another ad hoc committee to deal with other senior issues. The really only advantage of disbanding the commission, other than the fact that it didn't really seem to be necessary anymore, is it be a minor savings in staff time for producing the agenda package, administering the commission meetings, and mailing the package for the meetings. The disadvantage would be that it leaves the city without a commission whose sole responsibility is to provide information and advice to the council regarding senior issues. With that, I'd answer any questions that the council may have.
Questions on the staff report for Doug? No questions? This is a public hearing. If there's anyone in the audience would like to come forward on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Anyone? Okay. We'll close the public hearing portion of 9A and bring this back to the council. And Councilmember Guthrie, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I'll concur with staff's position. I mean, that I think it's probably been at least a couple of years that we've had any kind of regular meetings or any real agenda, so I can certainly support disbanding the commission.
Okay. Councilmember Arnold.
Yes, Mayor. I, too, can support this. I'm actually, while it's sad to see it go, I'm glad to see that government can actually stop doing something when it's no longer necessary as well as start it when it is. So I'll support it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
And I have no problems with going ahead with the disbanding of the commission. Any senior issues that come up, we still have a mechanism for the Parks and Rec Commission to deal with them or other issues to be raised for attention. So I don't think that we're going to have a hole here that needs to be filled. So I think we...
But once again, I think the senior or the issues affecting seniors have been addressed, and the whole reason for convening them in the first place was the long list that you mentioned, and those things have been resolved. I think if something comes up in the future, we can check in with a group over at Ocean Oaks or convene an ad hoc committee to address those. So I'll support this as well. And I'd also like to thank all of the commissioners that have served on the Senior Advisory Commission over the years. And with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I propose an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande repealing Chapter 2.28 of Title II of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code to disband the Senior Advisory Commission.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Arnold.
Yes.
Councilmember Costello.
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks, Doug. That will take us to 9B, our next public hearing, consideration of a vesting tentative tract map, planned unit development, case number 01-001, and this deals with tract 1998.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Tonight we're here as a continuance from the May 27th hearing. However, it is recommended that the item again be continued. Staff is recommending a date certain, alternatively date uncertain. Alternatively, the council may want to consider continuing it to a date certain as requested by the applicant. We have been working on several issues that were outlined in the May public hearing. Among those issues was obtaining additional input from agencies regarding jurisdictional issues surrounding the drainage hillside gully, and we have been obtaining input. However, we are still awaiting correspondence from these agencies, and we do expect to receive at least some correspondence in the near future. So with that, the council may want to discuss the date, if any, to continue this item.
Okay. I'm looking at the audience. I'm not seeing anyone from Castle Rock here this evening.
No.
No. Okay.
Four that we are contacting.
Okay. And we also talked about the emergency road, and I'm assuming that the applicant is still working on that.
Yes, staff and the applicant have been making progress on resolving issues for the emergency road access.
Okay. And are they also working on the or considering the issues regarding the finished lots?
Yes, we've had discussions with the applicant, and staff has some alternatives to bring forward to the council regarding the condition of the lots.
So all of these things are still in motion right
yes.
now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments on the or clarification on the staff report? None? Okay. This is a public hearing. We typically lead with the applicant, but the applicant is not here this evening. Anyone else who would like to come forward on this public hearing, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay. Seeing none, we will close the public hearing portion of 9B and bring this to the council. And I'm assuming that we want to address the issue of whether we continue this to a date certain or a date uncertain, and I'm to understand that the applicant has requested a date certain?
That is correct.
Okay.
The conversations with Jason Tyree of Castle Rock fundamentally talked about August 12th or August 26th. Their letter requested continuance to a date certain. This is a continuation, basically, of the May 27th meeting. We did meet with the environmental consultant as well as the Army Corps of Engineers representative and the Fish and Game representative, and the staff's intent is to share whatever correspondence is received from responsible agencies with the environmental consultant so that that can be integrated into the addendum. With that explanation, while a date uncertain is possible without the applicant's consent, and their written consent was to a date certain, I would encourage you to consider August 26th to allow adequate time for the agencies to correspond.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go ahead and start with our comments. We'll start at the other end with Councilmember Arnold.
I agree. I think a date certain is appropriate, and if I understand correctly, Councilman Costello.
But it sounds like we're waiting for much more information than we already have. So do you feel confident we can get the information we need back from the different bodies in just about 30 days, 34 days or whatever?
We understand that the field discussions that we've had are being converted to writing, at least from one of the agencies. There obviously have been previous requests for input from the responsible agencies. We will follow it again with a specific request. In the field, we advised them that it could be continued to as soon as August 12th, if it were continued from the tonight's hearing. So some of those letters were expected prior to August 12th. The additional 2 weeks would give the environmental consultant time to respond as well.
And what's the procedure if we don't have the information we need by the 26th?
I think that we would still have to act upon the information that we do have based upon the field information, the environmental consultant's additional input, respond to the issues that were raised in the May 27th council request and make recommendations accordingly. Hold the hearing with the best information available.
All right, thanks. I can support that date also, 26th.
Okay, thank you. The only request that I would, and I can support the 26th as well, but the only request that I would make is that I think we need to look at substance in terms of how we progressed with this project if on those issues that are in front of us. So if in staff's, you know, determination there has not been sufficient progress, or, you know, we don't have closure on an emergency access route, or we don't have closure on the or agreement or consensus on the finished lot issue, well, that may have to come to us anyway, but you see where I'm going with this. Please, you know, work with the applicant and make sure that what comes to us, that there's enough meat on it for us to at least move it forward. And if he needs a little more time, so be it. We can, you know, we can do that. Okay. With that, then, I'll entertain a motion on 9B.
Mr. Mayor, I'd move that we continue this item until the August 26th meeting.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Arnold? Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Members, the presentation this evening outlines a multifamily dwelling fire and life safety inspection program. This is an expanded overview of the one that you received during your budget presentation. Purpose of the
view slideshow. Go to view.
Am I fired?
You know, I bet if we paint that button red,
yeah,
you would have found
it. I'll work that. The purpose of the program is to prevent loss of life and property by providing prevention and education to property owners and managers, and conducting annual fire and life safety inspections of all apartment buildings with three or more units, hotels, motels, bed and breakfast facilities, and other congregant residences. Our authority rests with the California Health and Safety Code, and it cites that every city or county fire department or district providing fire protection services shall annually inspect all structures subject to a subdivision B of 17921, which includes hotels, motels, lodging houses, apartment houses, and dwellings. Additionally, the mandate states a city, county, or district which inspects a structure may charge and collect a fee for the inspection from the owner of the structure in the amount determined by the city, county, or district sufficient to pay the cost of that inspection. Our program goal is to protect building occupants from injury and loss of life, prevent property damage, and reduce housing or maintenance code complaints and substandard property conditions. The program overview. Annually, property owners and managers will receive a letter from the fire department regarding the annual inspection program. The inspection fee will be outlined within the letter, and an invoice will be included. A self-inspection form will also be provided so that any existing deficiencies may be addressed prior to the fire department's inspection. Our inspection guidelines include: verify the presence of at least one fire extinguisher of proper size and type mounted within 75 feet of all exterior areas. Inspect fire and sprinkler alarm systems and verify that the annual and five-year inspections have been conducted by a licensed contractor. Verify exits are clear of obstructions and ensure that exit signs are UL compliant. And verify panic hardware is properly installed, that weeds, uncut grass, and vegetation are removed. We also observe building smoke detectors logs and verify smoke detectors have been installed and maintained in all units, and verify pools, swimming pools and or spas have self-closing and self-latching gates. As you can see, there are several jurisdictions that conduct multifamily inspections. Those are several of the ones within the county, and several of other communities that are community service districts that also do multifamily inspections. And recently, Grover Beach approved the multifamily dwelling inspection program. These are the program fees. With units 10 or fewer is $110. With units of 11 to 30 is $225. And 30 or greater is $350. Currently, there are approximately 89 multifamily occupancies in the city of Arroyo Grande. These include, again, hotels, motels, bed and breakfast lodgings, and apartment complexes containing three or more dwelling units. That amounts to over more than 1,344 individual dwelling units. In summary, the overall goal of the annual multi-dwelling fire and life safety inspection program is to provide our citizens living within these dwellings a safe environment in which to live, to provide the property owners with the tools they need to protect their property from the threat of fire while maintaining their rental property values, and assist our code enforcement program with an additional tool to eliminate hazards within the community. That concludes my report, and I would be glad to answer any questions that the council may have.
Questions or clarifications in the staff report? Anyone? Councilmember Costello and then Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just wondering, I appreciate that we have 89 facilities in the community. Do we have any kind of a breakdown as to how many are 10 or fewer, how many are 11 to 30, and how many are 30 or greater?
Yes, I do, council member, but I don't have that information directly with me. We did tabulate that information, and I believe that there are more in the 11 to 30 category than there are in the 10 or fewer or 30 or greater. There's like four in the 30 or greater category.
My first impression was, of course, we have to follow state law and do the inspections, but I was hoping that we wouldn't lose money doing so. In the staff report, under background, the last sentence is, the code states that a city may charge and collect a fee sufficient to pay its cost for that inspection. Are we 100% recovering our cost, your cost, and the salaries and so on?
No. If you take a look at the full cost recovery that identifies in company inspections, it is for a company inspection, if you take the engine company out, that's approximately $700 and $730, which is quite expensive for us to even – I don't believe the public would support us coming out and doing a fire inspection and then receiving a bill for that amount of money. So what we've done is we've taken a percentage of time that we feel it would take to conduct an inspection on each one of these types, whether it be the 10 or fewer, 11 to 30, and 30 or greater, and applied a time to those ones, and then took a portion of that $729 and factored that in to get to our numbers. And so we could do this with either an engine company or a single resource, a person going out in a staff vehicle to conduct these inspections.
You could, meaning you will. You will make that
yes.
choice.
Yes.
Okay.
We have the ability to either or.
I like the idea that, this is a comment, but it leads to a question. I like the idea that there's a self-inspection for the owner of the units to make on his own, and then to call you and have you come out, your man come out. Or woman. But I'm guessing that since we have five laws and codes that you have to go out and inspect for compliance for, that there'll be some going out again if there have been some mistakes or shortcomings. Is there a reinspection fee?
We are allowed to charge a reinspection fee under the master fee schedule, but that would be could be discretionary. So let's say somebody calls us out. They weren't in full compliance for whatever reason after the first time we went out. And the second time we went out, it was either to look at extinguishers or take a look in the laundry room or for whatever. I think it may not be appropriate to charge that full fee as identified in the master fee schedule. Programmed it in Grover Beach is that we're doing on a quarterly basis. With each, I think I tried to explain a little bit about this last time, was that each shift has a portion of the city as their fire management zone. They will be responsible for that area. They'll go out quarterly, so it'd be managed throughout the year.
Okay. Thank you. This is not a public hearing, but we typically allow public input on important new business items. This is certainly one of them. If there's anyone in the audience who'd like to come forward on 11A, we'll give you 3 minutes to state your case. Anyone? Nobody? All right. We'll close public comment on 11A and bring this back to the council. And why don't we start with Councilmember Costello?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm pleased to see this item come before us. It's a task that we're mandated to do by state law, and I think that it's a life safety issue that's going to make the quality of life higher for everyone that's living in any of the properties that comes under the jurisdiction here. My only concern was the fiscal impact on the client base here, our citizens. However, the fiscal realities of the city being what they are, I think we do have to recover our costs. Certainly, it's not going to be full cost recovery. And just doing a little bit of simple math, if you take a look at a five-unit place, that breaks down to $22 per unit per year, which is less than $2 a month per unit. And certainly, if it's a 10-unit facility, it's less than $1 per unit per month. And if we go to the 30-unit structures, minimum of 30 units. That is a dollar a month or less than a dollar a month per unit. So I don't think the cost is going to be a burden for the community. This also has the added benefit. Not only are we doing the inspection process and making sure that the situations are safe and that any hazards are going to be corrected, but it's also going to build familiarity. As our responders go out there and do the inspection process, they're becoming familiar with the specific locations that they see. They're going to become acclimated to where the entrances are, where the exits are. If they have to respond to any life safety issues, whether they're fires or medical situations, they're going to be familiar with the locations. They're going to respond a little bit quicker. So I think this is a win-win situation, and I can support this tonight.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yes, I too can support it. In the hotel business, we certainly deal with the inspection every year. I'm actually a little surprised that we weren't already doing them, and maybe we were for hotels.
Is that that staff's done a good job on keeping the fee as low as possible without doing the reverse and making it a difficulty for the city? And so this is all about complying with the state law. It's all about preventing loss of life, and it's absolutely the right thing to do. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I would also support the fee approach here. Full cost recovery is one thing, but I know when we used to wrestle with full cost recovery with the state, we'd factor in indirect, and all of a sudden full cost recovery was something that was burdensome on those folks that we were levying the charge on. So I think a reasonable fee structure is what we have here in front of us, and I appreciate the work that went into this, Chief. And I did have a question. Is this something, I know it's in the codes, but is this something that insurance companies require as well? Do we know?
They take a look at whether they have been compliant with local fire codes and certainly their smoke detector logs and so forth.
Okay. Yes. And can we make an exception and check out the hotel and Jim's Hotel in Pismo Beach and charge him more? So. Okay, I can support this as well, and I'll entertain a motion on 11B.
Mr. Mayor, I move.
Or, I'm sorry, 11A.
I move the council adopt a resolution approving the multi-dwelling property fire and life safety annual inspection program and amending the master fee schedule to include multi-dwelling inspection fees.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion. Hearing none. Roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold? Did I get it? Who seconded it? Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. How's everybody doing? Still good?
Definitely.
Still good?
Good. Thanks.
Definitely.
Thanks for asking. Okay, thank you. That will take us to 11B, consideration of extending the joint fire services agreement with the City of Grover Beach and Oceano Community Services District. So you're not going very far, huh? Okay.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, what is before you this evening is an agreement for a joint management, administrative, and training services and equipment sharing between the City of Arroyo Grande, City of Grover Beach, and Oceano Community Services District for a period of 3 years. In 2007, the OCSD commencing March 1, 2008. At the end of the four-month period, the agreement could be extended by mutual consent of the parties for a period of up to 3 years. In the June 2008 Fire Oversight Committee meeting, it was discussed if the joint agreement was mutually successful. By mutual consent, it was recommended the agreement be extended for a period of up to 3 years. The agreement shall be automatically renewed on an annual basis after a three-year period. The agreement may be terminated at any time, with or without cause, upon 30 days prior written notice. The scope of the work for OCSD is reduced from what's provided to the City of Grover Beach with regard to administrative functions. The Fire Chief will continue to provide management and administrative services to the City of Grover Beach and provide broad policy guidance and management to OCSD. The Battalion Chief will continue to standardize training, develop curriculum, lesson plans, maintain a master training schedule, and continue recruiting and training reserve firefighters for all three departments. The Battalion Chief will represent all three departments at county training activities. The Fire Chief and Battalion Chief provide overhead support and major incidents. Personnel from each agency sit on joint committees to standardize equipment purchases, apparatus, training, and recruitment. We have developed mutual standard operating guidelines and are currently working on standardizing pre-plans. The three agencies train together on a daily and weekly basis and participate in multi-company drills. Both Chief Heath and I feel that the cooperation and efforts from all of the agency's personnel have made this agreement successful. We would like to thank the councils, the board of directors, general manager, and city managers for their support in our continuing efforts. In conclusion, staff recommends that council approve the Joint Fire Management Administrative Training Services and Equipment Sharing Agreement. And that concludes my staff report, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that the council may have.
Okay, thanks. Questions, clarifications?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Just as one, and the fact that you're bringing this forward, I think I know the answer is, obviously this is impacting you and Chief Heath is more than anyone else, and so you're not overwhelmed and overburdened. Things are settling down and working out good for you?
Yes, things are working well for both Chief Heath and myself. There, I got to admit there's challenges, but where Chief Heath and I are every day we're more comfortable with the things that we're putting in place that we think are making the program successful. So we're doing, I speak for myself, I'm doing fine.
Okay, we'll close the public comment portion of 11B, bring this back to the council, and I think it would be appropriate for you to start this one off, Joe.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I've been privileged to be the council representative on the Oversight Committee for this for the past couple of years. I'm delighted with the way that the cooperative agreement has worked. I think that it's made our department better. I think it's provided better service to the community of Rio Grande and the community of Grover Beach and to Oceano. In the staff analysis of this, there's a couple of potential disadvantages, and I'll address those. Potential of overextending the chief, fire chief, and battalion chief's responsibilities, resulting in reduction in service levels to the cities of Rio Grande, Grover Beach, and OCSD, Oceana Community Service District. Well, I don't think that's happening, and I don't think that it's going to happen. I think should that type of overextension become apparent, that we can react to that, and it does not, it should not be a reason to not go forward. Also, there's the second disadvantage cited is that since Oceana Community Service District is not an incorporated city, they don't have the same type of opportunities to generate revenue, so there could be a challenge in the future to fund their equitable portion. Again, I don't see that as a problem. Should that become an issue down line, we'll deal with it down line. I think the advantages to continuing this agreement are obvious and self-evident. It's a win-win-win situation for the three communities involved. As a matter of fact, it's a win-win-win-win situation because I think the fourth party involved here are the citizens of not just Arroyo Grande, but also Grover Beach and Oceano. To have a department or multiple departments that function together smoothly, efficiently as one, with one chief, with a set of standards for training, for operating procedures, is just a phenomenal thing to continue to go forward with. I will strongly encourage all my colleagues to go forward with this tonight, and I support this wholeheartedly. And I look forward to it continuing, and hopefully it will continue for long more than the 3 years we're talking about tonight.
Thank you. Council Member Guthrie.
Yes, I too can support this tonight. I do think that given the mutual aid agreements that we've had in place forever, that obviously the coordination of the three departments and is really essential and really provides a lot more efficiency and has actually provided us clearly with better training and better management oversight for all the fire departments.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. When we first looked at this, I was concerned about the differences in the equity and was wondering whether or not the true benefit was there. And I was also seriously concerned about the burnout with the chief. From all my discussion with the firefighters, everyone's very happy with our selection. And the last thing we want you to do is to overtax and retire too soon. So that has always been a concern of mine. But I have had a chance to see the successes and the actual savings that the city has seen as well. So I will support this tonight. But I too would like to see that over time we're able to close some of the gaps with the equity and hopefully everybody get on the same footing. So, but I can definitely support this tonight. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I'm constantly pleasantly surprised by the quality of the folks in the five cities, and it's heartening to see the hard work by BC Chief BC Heath and our chief. And I can certainly support this. I can't add much to what Joe said. It's his bailiwick, and I'm sure the mayor can add a bit.
Okay, thank you. Well, first of all, let me characterize what I've heard. Nothing but praise for you in particular, Mike, and we really appreciate the hard work that you put into this. You know, this, I understand the equity issues, and I understand the procedural issues and the politics, but one thing makes this work, and that's the people that run it. And I've heard nothing but very positive feedback from the board in Oceano, from the council in Grover Beach, and certainly I think you know how we feel about it. And while equity is an issue that we may have to get to, I think the important thing to look at is at the front end of this agreement. The front end of this agreement, I believe, is training, and what we have now is a much higher level of training and cooperation between the three agencies, with a recognition that if something catastrophic does happen, we perform like one agency. It's not just mutual aid; it's automatic aid, and we back each other up. And it's nice to know that the people who show up on site can perform regardless of which agency they're from. We can expect a standard of performance that's above and beyond, because you've all practiced and gamed and trained together. So that's what's most important.
Services and equipment sharing, the agreement between the cities of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and the Oceano Community Service District, extending the agreement for a period of 3 years.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All right, discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes, thank you. Moving on to 11C, consideration of approval of construction plans and specifications for Village Green.
I know. I've been practicing.
Mr. Mayor, City Council, I'm very pleased to finally be here to recommend moving forward the Village Green Improvement Plan. Staff's recommendation is threefold. First is to approve construction plans and specifications for the Village Green Improvement Project. Second is to find that the Village Green Improvement Plan is categorically exempt from CEQA pursuant to Section 15302, which I'll explain later on. And third, to direct Administrative Services to file a Notice of Determination. Financial impact of this project, we actually have $352,500 currently available for the project. Architect's estimate is $313,000 for improvement, which doesn't include the undergrounding costs, which are adds another $53,000, bringing our total cost to $366,000, which leaves us about $13,500 short. Staff recommends using the balance, actually providing balance of funds from leftover money from turf improvements out at the Soto Sports Complex. The initial conceptual plan was prepared in 2005, and the master plan was approved by the City Council in 2006. I'm going to move forward here a little bit and talk about this so the Council can see what I'm talking about. First part of the phase is to, is to replace walkways and parkways around the perimeter of the park, running right basically from Ruby's House on around down Mason Street to Nelson Street and Short Street, to also place with a picket fence, and the 6-foot fence along here is also going to be replaced. It's going to be irrigation modifications around all the project. There's going to be landscaping around the bandstand. There's going to be some flowers and other plants around these areas here. There'll be a couple of additional trees planted on the interior of the park. There's going to be actually a pathway running from Short Street along parallel to where to this parking lot, connecting into where the existing pathway is behind the existing bandstand, and tying in actually to the pathway that comes out from Ruby's house as well. And there's going to be additional four trees planted here between the gravel parking lot and the green itself. And lastly, there's going to be some undergrounding of utilities. AT&T will be undergrounding their lines here along Nelson Street. Charter Communications will be doing undergrounding here along Mason Street. And there's going to be conduit installed on all three sides, actually here on Short, Nelson, and Mason for future PG&E undergrounding if we choose to go forward with that. The original budget for this project is $388,500. The funding for that was provided from about $75,000 from sales of land, another $30,000 donation from Howard Makins, which actually is provided for the lights that are going to go around the perimeter of the project, about $220,500 from park improvement funds, and an additional $63,000 of park development funds. It's already been $36,000 spent on studies, design, and construction, which leaves us about $13,500 short, which once again, staff is recommending a balance from savings on turf improvements at the Soto Sports Complex. Timeline for this project, we're looking to start in early October after Harvest Festival and conclude in early April prior to the Strawberry Festival. It's really our window, really only window of time without interfering with other activities and operations on the park. During that time, the bandstand and the park will be closed, which certainly is going to create an inconvenience for neighbors who like to walk their dogs, have picnics, and just have general meetings. You go to that park anytime, you see people out there. So certainly the users are going to be inconvenienced. In addition, the Halloween carnival will have to be relocated out to Elm Street Park for a year while we do the construction project. You talk a little bit about parking. The concept of parking around the Village Green was actually brought up in two plan without including parking on any of the three streets surrounding the park. In 2007, the Downtown Parking Advisory Board once again recommended parking on Nelson, Mason, and Short Streets, perpendicular or diagonal parking. Two public hearings were held. The Traffic Commission in March 2008 conducted a public hearing without making a recommendation. However, there was significant opposition from a lot of the neighbors in the area who didn't want to see the park reduced. They didn't want to be looking at cars parked around the perimeter of the green. The Downtown Parking Advisory Board actually made some good suggestions on why parking was needed. However, once again, there was no recommendation came from the Traffic Commission. In April 2008, the Parks and Recreation Commission also held a public hearing. Again, a lot of opposition from the neighbors, and the Parks and Recreation Commission recommended unanimously that the City Council not include parking on any of the three sides of the park. In May 2008, the Downtown Parking Advisory Board once again requested that the City Council consider parking only on Short Street and some improvements to the gravel parking lot there in the Heritage Square, which you can see here. Actually, the improvements to the gravel parking lot have already been incorporated into the plan. All that really was done here was move the existing driveway apron was right here. Actually, it kind of came in right into right on the edge of this palm tree, so it's been moved a little bit south, which enables double load of parking to go to both sides. When the ramp was, when the apron was here, pretty much forced cars just to go to the right. Now they can go both left and right if we implement this new apron here. The perpendicular parking here on Short Street would include 11 spaces, which is an increase of, what, five or six spaces? Is that correct, Rob? Increase the parking here by five or six spaces. It also would enable people, as they come in or to park, they can back out this way and come out without having to go down and do a three-point turn to try to get out of Short Street. The disadvantage of including parking here on Short is that it cuts about 8 feet additional into the park, which would eliminate about 800 to 1,000 square feet of park that's a well, it just eliminated. We have a number of alternatives for the council's consideration. First is to approve staff's recommendation. Second is to direct staff to include parking on Short Street and then approve the recommendation. Third is decorative lights around the perimeter of the park and the new sidewalk going around the perimeter. And the ADA access will be improved with the conforming ramps on Nelson and Mason and Nelson and Short Streets and the walkway from Short Street connecting over to the bandstand and to Ruby's house. There are some disadvantages, certainly, with the project. The negative impact of the park closure on the neighbors in particular and the people who regularly use the park. There's going to be certainly noise and traffic during the construction. It's going to, again, affect the neighbors. In addition, roughly $300,000 of park development and park improvement funds potentially could be used for other projects if it were not used for this particular project. There is environmental review required. This project is, if staff finds that the project is categorically exempt from CEQA pursuant to, once again, Section 15302, which states replacement or reconstruction of existing structures or facilities on the same site having substantially the same purpose and capacity, which is essentially exactly what we're doing here. And with that, I'd answer any questions the council may have.
I got a quick question for you, Doug. The parking on Short Street, is it staff's recommendation or not at this time, or are you waiting for direction from us?
Waiting for direction from the council. I would follow the Parks and Recreation Commission's recommendation. You know, their recommendation was not to include parking on any of three sites. I think Rob might want to weigh in on that.
Let me ask you a question on the staff report. That 8 feet of incursion into the park itself, you refer to utilities.
Correct.
What are we talking about in terms of cost for electrical, concrete utilities, all of that?
I don't know. First of all, I will say that we're waiting for guidance from the staff. It's not a staff's recommendation to include parking on Short Street, so we're looking for guidance from the council on that, if it's okay, if it's the council's pleasure. As far as the cost for redesign of moving the sidewalk inward 8 feet, that would have that impact the utilities and the cost for the redesign, we don't have an estimate on that.
Okay. Any other questions on the staff report? Go ahead.
The $13,500 on the savings at Soto, is that already realized? Is that a project we've already done that came in under?
It has occurred. I think the other item I wanted to mention is the categorical exemption would not necessarily apply to modification of Short Street. So not only a redesign expense and some additional construction expense to widen the street to accommodate the perpendicular parking, but at least an initial study to discuss the drainage and environmental issues associated with it would be necessary, and that could cause a delay in the project schedule. So we simply wanted to point out that despite the input of the Traffic Commission and the Parks and Recreation Commission, the Downtown Parking Advisory Board still sees a potential benefit for the location of the sidewalk and parkway to be further in, particularly the potential for the perpendicular parking. The accommodation of the gravel parking lot that came up during the Traffic Commission's discussion has been discussed with South County Historical Society, and they are willing to accommodate expansion of their lot. It's about a 2 or 3 foot increase in the gravel width as well as a modification of the driveway, and they also don't have any funds budgeted for the driveway replacement, so that's an issue with the current project.
When you talk about the exemption right now from CEQA, most likely it would require a neg deck, though. It wouldn't require an EIR. Is that correct? Okay. And then the proposal, as I saw in the drawing, if we were going to do the parking there, the proposal actually shows doing the grass median still. And if a sidewalk were to go right against the parking, that could save an additional 3 or 4 feet of the park. Is what is the width of that grass?
The drawing basically indicated the same width of parkway to accommodate the trees and the lights. It would just be 8 foot to the east of where it currently is. The curb and the widening of the street could be accomplished now or later, depending upon your instruction and direction.
Okay, and we have no cost estimate right now. Looking at, because I don't know what the other competing products are, but if this was space that you got 6 spots and they cost $10,000 a spot versus other spots that were $30,000, there might be logic why one would win versus the other.
The other projects are the Car Corral, trying to redo that, and then the parking expansion of the property we purchased behind the council chambers here.
Okay.
Maybe if I'd like to just quickly clarify the staff's recommendation, because I know there was some maybe unclarity in that in questions, is if you look in your staff report, the staff is recommending approval of the construction plans and specifications for the project, which does not identify that additional parking. I think what Doug was alluding to is we wanted to provide that as an option, and we want to get feedback from the council. But our recommendation is consistent with the recommendation of the Parks and Recreation Commission, and we had not included those in the proposed bids and specifications.
Thanks. Was that it?
That was it.
Okay. Councilmember Costello.
Just a couple of quick questions. If we were to approve this tonight without any additional parking, as we see illustrated right now, and decided a year or 2 years from now that we needed the additional space, what work would be done now that might need to be altered or changed?
Well, certainly the curb, gutter, and sidewalk could be moved. The lights would have to be moved. The underground conduit that was installed would have to be moved. Those at a very minimum.
Okay. And that's fine answer for me. I'm just curious, how much turf savings did we get over on Soto?
Oh, turf savings, roughly
$25,000. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Did you have a question? Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Doug, you mentioned the 6-foot fence between Ruby's and the History House being replaced. What does that entail? Replaced with what?
With a similar fence. It'd be a 6-foot either cedar or redwood. It could be a more decorative fence, actually.
Okay.
I don't have that in front of me to show the council.
No, that's enough. That sounds good. Okay. Thank you. Now, I was present when the presentation regarding the gravel parking lot, or the school parking lot, was made to the board of directors. I'm on the board of directors of the Historical Society. And it's interesting. I think maybe they perhaps need to work on their bylaws or whatever, how they conduct meetings, because it was proposed, there were some changes, they sent, but that remains in question. And then on the lights, I don't remember, was there an amount of public input from the folks that live around the park regarding the lighting?
Not to my knowledge.
When did that enter the plan? Or it's been there all along, but there's just been no public input?
Well, it was something added before the initial meetings, but we've had a series of some follow-up meetings the last the last year, and it's been in the plan for at least the last year, and it's been identified as one of the features, and as well as a lot of the public information that we've put out in terms of the number of articles we've identified it.
Okay. If I recall right, having spoken with the lighting contractor who came and took a look around the park, they can design these lights so they really don't shine a great deal out on the houses that are on the street, but more into the park for security reasons.
All right, thanks.
A follow up to that, if you'd like us to, and it probably is appropriate, we'd be happy to go around and make some one-on-one contacts with the immediate residents facing those lights, just to ensure that there's not any major concerns before we proceed.
Sounds like a good idea. Thank you.
Well, the other issue on the public outreach is that when we had our two workshops with regard to the trees in the village. This was also presented at, in fact, one of the workshops was held at the Village Green, at the bandstand. We had probably, 25 people there maybe. And I suspect that probably majority of them were immediate residents. And I believe the consultant did introduce the whole lighting concept as well, did he not, Steve?
Yeah, I think we had, correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, I think we had an actual example of the light there.
Yeah, that's true, you did. And you had this drawing as well on a easel. So, I think there has been some outreach, direct outreach on all aspects of this project.
Could I just comment one more time on the gravel parking lot? We actually were out there. We walked that off and measured it about 2 months ago. And that was actually incorporated into the actual plan that the council is being asked to approve tonight. So those drawings or the plans to enlarge that gravel parking lot just slightly are already incorporated into the plans.
Maybe I could clarify. I think I know the meeting you're referring to, though. Is that initially there was concern, there was support for the project, as I understand, by the historical.
Okay, any other questions? All right, once again, this is not a public hearing, but we would invite anyone in the public would like to come forward on this item.
Yeah, my name is Nancy Underwood, and I live at 142 Short Street, right on the corner of Short and Nelson, so I'm right across the street from the park. I do appreciate the improvement to the park. The advantages as stated, as listed and discussed tonight that were actually up on the screen, I agree with. The disadvantages, I think most of us realize that, there's going to be a disadvantage to having, the construction and the park being closed and so forth for a period of months. But I understand that, that's a necessary component, and I would assume that others would as well. My concern and the reason I'm here, and actually the only reason I'm here, is because I happened to pay my water bill today and just glanced to see in the billboard out there what was coming up before City Council and the Planning Commission. And I saw that this was going to be discussed tonight. And though I was one of many who attended Traffic Commission meeting and the Parks and Rec meeting this last spring, which discussed the parking in depth and all the objections that and concerns that many of us had. We were very clearly told that if at any time this is how I interpreted it, and I talked with a couple other people today as well, that at any time this topic was to come up to the council about the parking around any of the Mason, Nelson, or Short Street, that we would be notified so that we could come and speak, because we have a lot of concerns. And the people I spoke with today, we were all under consensus that, no, they're not going to talk about it tonight because none of us received any notification. And I decided I would just come anyway. And here it is. So my concerns is that we're still discussing parking on Short Street. There was no notification, so I'm the only person here because I just happened to see it. And it's my understanding that based on past experiences of attending many, many meetings with Park and Rec and Planning Commission, through all of 2000 and even prior to that, and if there was another meeting that discussed the parking on Short back then we didn't receive the notification, and we should have. And I've lived there since 1971, so I mean, we've been very involved. So I'm not certain, and that that's correct, that the parking on Short was approved through the Parks and Rec, because I did attend the meeting that I was aware of that Park and Recs had, where it was discussed in early 2000. So, those are my main concerns, that we weren't notified that it was going to be discussed again when we were told just a few months ago that it would be. I don't feel that this is the right time for me to give all of my objections to it. Nor should I be speaking for other people, and there were many people here. You can look back on the Parks and Recs minutes and the Traffic Commission minutes. There were a lot of objections. But I don't feel that I should speak for them, nor is this the time to speak for it, to my objections tonight, because I really thought, oh, I'll just go and hear what they're having to say, but I didn't expect it really to be brought up tonight because we weren't notified. The only other point that I... comment that I would make would be that we're talking 8 feet, but as we talked about it at the previous meetings, it went from 8 feet, well, approximately 8 feet, maybe 10 feet, could be as much as 12 feet. You know, so there's no definitive there, and you know, the more feet you add, the more space we lose in the park. And so that's a big concern. And then the other thing that hasn't been brought up here but was part of discussion that kind of came out in the previous meetings was that there was a real crunch for long-term parking for employees, and that that would be a good solution for them to park over on short streets. So it's not cars that would just come occasionally. It would be cars that are there all the time, and concerns about people walking back and forth across the swinging bridge in the dark and at different times. So anyhow, there's a lot of issues. So those are my concerns. But we do support the improvement to the park, or at least I do. I can only speak for myself, and understand that it's going to be closed, you know, for a period of time. So.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem has a question for you.
Nancy, you didn't mention a concern.
Okay.
Thanks for your comments. Anyone else? Okay. We'll bring this back to the council, and why don't we start with Councilmember Guthrie?
Well, I guess starting with the parking, I was actually a little surprised, but I do understand why the parking came back, because the Downtown Parking Association, not the Parks and Recreation Commission, had actually voted to recommend that we include the parking. So that's the direction I believe why staff brought it back. So it wasn't the Parks and Rec Commission, it was the Downtown Parking Association who's been pushing this all along. So on the parking issue, I guess there's certainly the neighborhood objection to it. It makes the street pretty awkward. I personally don't think that the five spaces is worth it. When we were talking about all of the parking, maybe that there would have been some discussion there, but there was far more complications with taking a piece out of all three sides of the park and all of the flow of traffic on Mason and those other streets that precluded that as a possibility. So I'm not going to give direction that we should go back and replan the park to include the parking. I think we've dealt with it two or three times, and it's time to move forward with it. I'm certainly happy to see this come forward. I think the timing's real good here. We're looking at redoing the village green at the same time we're talking about doing the village streets. So we're looking at a major, going through all the catharsis of construction at the same time, and we'll see the major improvement in the village and the village green area in the next year and a half, 2 years, and see it all happen at once. I think that's a good thing. We've been talking about this for about a year, year and a half, and I'm certainly happy to see us ready to move forward with the construction and could support it tonight. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello?
I, too, can support this tonight. As proposed, I don't think that we should expand the parking. I think Jim Guthrie's comments are right on the mark here. I don't think it's worth it, the additional five spaces. And if we were to approve it now, I don't think we want to come back and revisit it later, because it's going to incorporate changing the sidewalk, the conduit, and all the utilities that are in there. I think that we should just go forward with the project as proposed tonight and not expand any parking.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Rob, I have a question. The homes across the street on Short, the zoning there is what, mixed use residential or...
Yes.
Village mixed use?
Village mixed use.
Okay. So I understand their decision completely. I don't agree with it. I actually think this would have been a very worthwhile spot for the six additional spaces. And my concern is that it's slow, but I think it's going to continue to happen. I know that I actually personally looked at the one home that's for sale right now near the swinging bridge for potentially a small retail shop. And I think it's going to happen as the intensification of the park continues. I know we like to refer to it as a quaint little neighborhood park, but the realities are a lot more as the village continues to develop. This is getting used more. I think the bandstand has attracted a lot more people. More people know of the location. And it's a wonderful little park. So, and the fact that we are having continual conversion of homes in the area to antique shops and such, that I think that's what we're going to see. And so whether right now or in 3 years or 5 years, it's going to be a shorter time than we're going to want to look and come back and move conduit, tear up sidewalks and such. And realistically, I don't think it's that big of impact. So I completely support the park improvements. I just don't support the park improvements without the parking. So I actually am not going to support this tonight because I would have liked to have had more input into the parking. I'm disappointed that the Traffic Commission was unable to render a decision. And like I say, I fully understand why Parks and Rec did render their decision. But so I think it's a completely worthwhile goal. I just think we're stopping too short. I think the parking on all the other streets was wrong. The streets are through. It would have created, I think, hazards with backing out and everything else. But this is a dead-end street where the straight pull-in parking, not diagonal, would have worked perfect. And while we say I wouldn't have probably supported it even for employees, I would have probably said let's put a restriction on the time there as well, so that for the neighbors we wouldn't see all-day parking there with the same cars. But I do think over time that street is going to change. It's a logical spot for change to occur, and since the zoning's there, I think it will happen. So while I say I do support the changes as proposed with everything minus the parking, I will not be supporting this tonight. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Doug, I have a question before my comments.
Representative of the DPAB.
Okay. This is more or less a repeat concern and topic of the Downtown Parking Advisory Board. I think they feel that it is a more efficient and affordable solution than off-street parking. They're basically using existing street right-of-way for all of the maneuvering and for half of the parking space. There's parallel parking along the street now. So by widening 8 feet, and there has never been more than 8 feet discussed on the short street alignment, for the portion that would not interfere with existing utilities and or park improvements, the gain of 6 spaces, they feel, would be more efficient than creating 6 spaces any place within the city, whether it's expansions to future parking.
So the gain of 6 spaces for whom?
The basic concern of the Downtown Parking Advisory Board, because they were not consulted with the development of the expanded museum complex and the installation of the bandstand, is an increasingly popular venue that generates a parking demand that has never been addressed, and that this was an opportunity to accommodate more parking adjacent to their destination, the park itself. Otherwise, the spillover effects of the activities that are conducted within the park affect the residential neighborhood and the commercial district in an adverse way.
Thank you. Okay, my comments are that some of you may remember when I was on Planning Commission, I was opposed to the village mixed use in this area because of the burden upon the folks that live there and probably live there for a long, long time as it slowly converts perhaps to a commercial. And therefore, I am against the parking. Even though we shouldn't be talking about it, perhaps my opinion goes along with the majority of the folks that live there. Anything that intensifies cars and activities and so on, It's not what I think really belongs in that part of the village. So I'm against adding any extra parking spaces. And I can also see, sooner or later, the folks that park along the curb in front of their homes will get backed into by somebody accidentally accelerating in reverse or even just, you know, making a mistake in their driving. So I'm opposed to, I say leave it the way it is, improve it the way it is, and don't add those six extra parking spaces. I would like to make sure that staff follows up and talks to, let's put it that way. So, okay, I can approve the project as proposed, not any extra parking. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, going back to the village mixed use issue, as I recall when we were taking another look at this, I could be wrong, but it seemed to me that at least part of our motivation for doing this was essentially to play catch-up. We already had a doctor's office. I think we had a dentist office. I think we had one house that was right on the corner of Short and Nelson, on the south side of Nelson, that wanted to become an antique store, and in fact did. I think I don't know if they're still there or not, but they were an antique store for a while. And it seems as though that the on-street parking that currently exists seems to serve those businesses well. Even though the zoning is there, I guess I don't agree with Councilmember Arnold to that extent. I really don't think that there's going to be that much of a conversion to commercial or retail that would essentially drive us into an issue where parking was becoming exceedingly difficult. The other thing that I want to come back to is, you know, there was some discussion about the priorities, you know, where the money was going to go. And, Steve, you mentioned once again the fact that some time ago we took a step backward and looked at a comprehensive parking plan for the village as a whole. And that's why we've invested so much time and money in acquiring the space here behind the council chamber. Which has the potential to, in fact, expand into a parking garage if we need it to be, and I believe that that's where our money needs to go. I believe that needs to continue to be our priority to develop that available additional parking for everyone in the village. And I agree that the Village Green has, in fact, become much more of a destination for events and a location, a venue for events, and we find more people using it. But we also try to encourage that park in particular, much more so than the rest of our parks, I think, to be much more pedestrian-oriented. We don't want people driving there. We want them getting out of their cars and walking there. And with the 4th of July, and I think we barbecued something like 350 of them in about 2 hours, and the place was packed, and that's a good thing. And it was particularly packed along this end here, and we literally had chairs out to the edge of the park, and so we had a lot of activity. It was a wonderful event, but we needed every foot of that park, and I just can't see reducing the size of the park. The only other suggestion that I would make, and I made this to our consultant, trying to think of his name, Jeff. Yeah, could you put up the other diagram of the plan itself, right there? The only other comment that I made, and I don't want you to get too excited here. The only other comment that I made was on this tree. And because we do have our summer concert series, we have the 4th of July, we have other events that we invite people up, I was hoping that we could relocate this somewhere, perhaps out on the periphery, so that we were able to maintain this amphitheater look without any view obstruction. And I realize that, you know, if we plant a tree right there, you know, hopefully if it's the right tree, it'll grow up and people can see underneath it. But it would seem to me that while that's happening, we're going to cut off a lot of seating area, and we may cut off view shed and line of sight. Right now, we have a nice little amphitheater area that I would like to maintain, and at least for 4th of July, we needed every angle to that bandstand that we could get to accommodate the number of people that we had. So if there's a way that we could relocate that one tree and get it out of the line of sight, that might be beneficial.
I should add it. This tree. Oops, I need to use my mouse here. This tree has already been planted by the Tree Guild. These two trees, actually, in the plans, it specifies that they will be located in consultation with staff. So, where these are shown right now isn't necessarily where they're going to end up. We move these anywhere in the park that we want.
Okay, good.
In fact, one of the things we planned is to try to get some specimens and take him out there during one of these concerts before the summer's over and pop him in there, and then we can actually see kind of how it relates to the concerts and move them around.
Well, if you could just be mindful of the line of sight issue.
I'll move that we approve the construction plans and specifications for the Village Green Improvement Project, PW2007-05, that we find that the Village Green Improvement Project is categorically exempt under CEQA and direct the Administrative Services to file a notice of determination.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
No.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, we have a request for a quick break before we get to our next item.
Did we miss it?
No, I just thought maybe it would be appropriate to make one comment. I know there were some concerns about that we didn't get the notice out to the neighborhood on this, and we apologize for that, even though we've gotten a lot of input. We think we've addressed all the comments, but I just want to make the point that we could continue to meet and find out if there are any concerns that have not been addressed. We'll be getting the bids in. We have to come back to council one more time to award the bids. So if there's something we don't address, it would give us an opportunity to meet with folks. And then if they still have concerns, they'd still have the ability to come back to you one more time to express that. So,
okay. I just want to check in. You understand what we did tonight?
I think you voted 4-5 of moving it looking like that without the park.
Right. That's it. Okay, so yeah, and the door is open. If anybody has any issue out there, feel free to come in, and we'll do some outreach, some additional outreach as well.
The only other comment I wanted to, I think
can you go to the microphone, please?
Can you? Yeah.
Sorry. Only a minor clarification is that I keep hearing about the immediate residents. The people who were interested in this, especially the parking issue, were not just the immediate residents. It was everyone in that, not everyone, but many, many people in the village and many people who don't live in the village but do live in Rio Grande and come to that park routinely, in the Village Green routinely. I don't know if it's going to actually become a park now, but I was told there was a different.
It'll always be Nelson Green to me.
So it's not just the immediate residents that were concerned about the parking. It's probably just the immediate residents would be concerned about lighting. But okay. It was other people throughout.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Anything else, Steve? All right. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back at 9:05.
Policy or procedure that would outline the reimbursement of actual expenditures, or converting that to the stipend, or a combination of the both. Now, staff would view any conversion of that to the stipend as simply a transfer of one form of compensation to another, since it would be the same amount, and rather than an increase. However, any changes in stipend or salary do require a special or separate ordinance and would not be able to take effect until the next city council term under current state law. Now, as you know, council currently receives a stipend of $330 each a month, along with the allowance. The allowance was first created and the stipend was last increased way back in 1997. In comparison to the other cities in the county, it's below the median and has not been increased since that time. In addition, at the April 22nd meeting, Mayor Ferrara requested staff, and the City Council concurred for staff to prepare a draft policy and procedure on how to budget for City Council travel expenditures. And we have included a draft policy for your consideration with the staff report. However, in addition to that, that policy was really intended to be kind of an ongoing policy and procedure for this year. In addition to that, we had made some previous recommendations that due to the budget shortfall this year, we limit budgeting to fund each council member the ability to attend the annual League of California Cities conference. And then in addition to that, recommend the City Council appoint one liaison to the League of California Cities to participate in other boards and necessary committees, and that we would fund necessary meetings and activities related to the function for the liaison. So with that, we have attached for your consideration a resolution that would eliminate the $75 expense allowance and recommend approval of that item. And then beyond that, we would request additional direction from the council on how.
We're on the edge here. We're borderline. So before we decide what we do with it, what I'd like to do, if everyone concurs, is maybe deal with that resolution repealing the allowance that we have, the vehicle allowance. And then we'll decide what we want to do with that in some other form, if anything, and then get on with the other issues. Would that be okay? Okay. So if there's any discussion on that, now's the time to do it. If not, I'll entertain a motion to with regard to that resolution.
Mr. Mayor, I propose a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande repealing resolution number 3255 regarding council expenditure reimbursement.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Okay. Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay. Now, any questions, comments on the rest of the staff report with regard to potential, if any, redirection of the allowance? And why don't we deal with that issue first, and then we'll talk about travel.
Are we doing questions and comments, or just?
We're doing questions right now for clarification. Any comments, clarifications?
Questions, no questions.
Okay, all right. Anyone from the audience? No? Okay. Now we're doing comments. Why don't we start with Jim, on the allowance, we'll deal with the allowance.
I guess my feeling is, although I concur with the direction of rest of council, but that we did not increase the stipend, that we deal with whatever additional expenses as a per item, on a per item basis, because there will inherently be some, there are expenses associated, small expenses associated in general with attending meetings for council, and those have to be accounted for separately. So this would end up being, I'm just not sure how we make the distinction between what I'll call those little trips and what are the bigger trips that we're ultimately going to be talking about in the reimbursement. So my feeling is that we shouldn't increase the stipend, and that we should just forgo the auto allowance and deal with that on a mileage basis.
Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I agree that I think we should roll the travel or the reimbursables into just our stipend. The realities are we've been taxed at as if it was a stipend. We've been receiving it. I have been opposed to raising the council's stipend, but I'm not particularly looking for a reduction as well. And my biggest reason is the same as Councilman Costello's, is I know I eat a lot of little receipts that I would rather not start bothering to keep track of and turning in. it's not going to be a question of whether I can come up with $75 worth of reimbursables on a monthly basis. I would just rather not have to. And since we're really not talking about any kind of increase. We're just strictly talking about keeping the status quo and making it legal and or not skirting the edge. As we have been, so and I don't think anyone even remotely realized that we were. So for me, it would just be to continue the way we've been doing it, but making it conform to AB 1234.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
Same here as far as Councilman Arnold's opinion. It's my understanding that what we get now, which is under the median and so on, and certainly the wrong time to ask for a raise, is what we'll be getting if we just do this bookkeeping change. So I'm for rolling the 75, adding it to the 330. We'll get the same amount. We're not asking for a raise. Actually, by not asking for a raise at this time, just in case there's any member of the public out there watching, we're actually taking a cut every year when the cost of living goes up, and we're not getting cost of living increases. But that's okay, because other folks are taking cuts also. So I can go along with the Councilman Arnold's suggestion, 330, 75, make them both tax. Well, they're both taxable now. Make them stipend. But, and I don't understand, I didn't catch Councilman Guthrie's reasoning for not going along with that, but I don't know if that matters or not.
Well, yeah, actually, I was going to ask you, too.
I guess my concern is that how do we then make a distinction? I understand that we all, you know, make small trips or have lunches or whatever that are certainly council-related and would be reimbursable, and that we create this not just for us but for staff as well, this sort of accounting nightmare. My concern is how do you make a distinction now between what becomes a reimbursable expense. Is it outside the city? Is it, you know, when does it become a reimbursable, a small reimbursable expense, as opposed which we're now going to not ask for reimbursement for, as opposed to what I'll say are trips and those kinds of things, and maybe we can handle that in the travel expense, but I'm not as totally convinced that we can, and do it well.
I guess my question is, are you actually submitting reimbursables right now? Because I think what we're all doing is the same thing. We've said we've had this $75, and so I guess if you were picking up a lunch for someone, so technically you're still getting that $75 instead of it calling it.
I understand exactly what you're saying, and I agree with you. I'm not submitting, and I don't think anybody is, partly because of the trouble, and because that's, you know, because we're covered, and we would be covered again. My only concern has to do with the accounting of those kinds of things. If we're, you know, when do you make that distinction, and can we handle that in our travel, what's going to become our reimbursable expense area? I don't have a strong feeling about it either way. I could certainly support rolling it into the 75. I just think that then somehow we have to deal with what now constitutes a reimbursable expense. Right now, we're all in our minds feeling fine where we're covered, even if we're not completely covered. But the once we roll this into our salary, then those small reimbursements are no longer covered. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Quick question for Tim. I understand your discussion and yours too, Ed. I assume that there's probably a state law that already addresses what are reimbursable expenses outside of, you know, just what are day-to-day reimbursable expenses, that there probably is provision for this right now that exists on paper. We're just not choosing to do it.
I'll defer to Steve on this one.
No, I'm not sure about state law, and I wish I had my whole policy manual here, because we have policies that mainly cover staff, but a lot of it could just be extended to council if that were the intent. And we have our travel policy, and there's some specific provisions that identify what is travel versus what are local expenditures. And I think we could, I'll have to look that over, but I think we could probably expand those to cover the same things, because, any travel expenditures would still be covered under the travel policy, and then your other policy would cover anything local. And there's some provisions in there that provide a definition of what constitutes travel, whether it's overnight or beyond a certain distance type of thing.
Well, let me jump in here. The First, in answer to or response to Joe's question with regard to state law, I think AB 1234 is what we have, and that's it. And AB 1234 states that it's a responsibility of the local agency to come up with a policy, and that policy. But if you read between the lines, appropriate. That said, and I was hoping to kind of keep the allowance separate from our reimbursement policy, but it doesn't look like we can do that. There's a little bit of spillover, but we'll try at least. Conversations that I had with Steve, I was originally against. I was somewhere where you were. I was against rolling it over into our stipend because of the perception, the public perception that it might constitute a raise, and now is certainly not the time for us to do that with our budget situation the way it is. But having the recent experience a few days ago down in Los Angeles, coming back from vacation, of filling my gas tank, which was totally dry. It was $76 to fill my tank once. That doesn't count meals. That doesn't count any other incidental costs that might be associated with council business. That's one tank of gas, which I don't know about the rest of you, but I probably burn at least that much a month on city business. So I'm thinking at this point, you know, what between the two situations, which one would benefit our current budget situation the best? And I think continuing to roll the allowance into the stipend and offset those as much as we can, those direct costs, which does not constitute a raise for us. As someone said, it maintains the status quo. That in the long run, it would be much more economical for the city than it would be at 58.5 cents a mile, which is it's not only the IRS mileage rate right now, but when I talked to Angie yesterday about, you know, could we kick that down a little, maybe to the state rate, and then I called and found out that the state rate is now 58.5 cents a mile. So at 58.5 cents a mile, if we were to keep track of all of our miles, each one of us, and tack on our incidental costs, it would be much more than $75 a month. And it would have much more of a budget impact than if we just continue to, you know, eat the costs, the extent to which we're over, roll it over, and call it even. And by so doing, we're still below the wherever you go. And if you change cars, you got to take your logbook with you, and it's just it's not worth it. So as far as the stipend versus the allowance, I think I can support now going ahead and rolling it over with the understanding that it's not going to change our bottom line at all. And in fact, in the long run, if we were to go to the reimbursement mechanism that I described, it would be much more of a fiscal impact on the city to deal with our actual costs. So I can support that aspect. How do you want to handle that? You want to take another bite out of this?
And I think that's probably a real good idea.
And then we'll get into the long-range travel and the league issue?
Sure.
Okay. Then how about a motion on this aspect?
Okay. Mr. Mayor, I propose that the City Council adopts rolling the previous $75 reimbursement into the council stipend starting in...
Did you want to say something?
We have to interrupt. This will have to be done by a separate ordinance that will modify the ordinance on the books. So it can't actually be done tonight. We'll bring it back separately.
Okay, agendized. So it could be a motion to direct staff to do right. This. All right.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I direct staff to bring back an ordinance to roll the $75 travel reimbursement into our monthly stipend, and keeping the overall dollar amount the same as we have been receiving.
Okay. That's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All right. Discussion? Roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thanks. Okay, let's. What else is left? Let's deal with the league issue. I'm listed in the staff report, and the only thing I'll offer at this time, and I know that the league has areas of interest for all of us, and so, you know, speaking for myself, if you guys decide that we want to move to a liaison concept, if that's what you want to do, then I'm certainly tired of the annual events and so on and so forth. So that's my involvement with the league, and I have to continue that. I can't pull back from that right now. But that doesn't mean that we're stuck with this liaison concept. It's here so we can discuss it. So,
I'll chime in because I'm obviously on a policy committee as well, and I agree completely that I think you're providing the best representation to the city. Steve and I have ended up on the same policy committee this year, and while I've found it informative, I'm not sure that I've added the value that I would have liked to, and so therefore I have no problem stepping down from my committee.
How do you feel?
And I concur, although I find it's useful to be on the policy committee that I am on. I think that you could represent the city's interests fully, and we could discuss issues here at home, and I don't need to travel to the meetings for the subcommittee meetings. So I can support the liaison idea, and I can support you being that liaison person.
Sure. I guess my only caveat here would be is when we're having what are called the quarterly meetings and they're within the county, I do think maybe we want to look at supporting whoever the sponsoring city is, that we attend as many as those that are within our county as possible. There's very minimal travel. The actual cost of the dinner is minimal. And I'm afraid that if everybody went to this liaison concept, we'd end up with, these quarterly meetings of nine people. So I think we would open up some sort of a county deal that would say when it's within the San Luis County. I mean, technically Santa Maria is close too, but maybe we use a mileage deal, but that there would be some sort of ability that we would all step up and support the. Of course, maybe we just treat that as part of that $75 stipend.
I'm not considering the charter county.
The Tri-County.
Tri-County.
Channel County.
Channel County. I'm not considering the Channel County meetings. I'm not excluding all of our participations in those on a continued basis.
I actually thought that was the one place where the liaison works best. I'm just pointing out when we're, there's one coming up at Santa Paula. That's
a city. No. So. I'll tell you right now, I don't want to go alone to those channels.
Yeah, a motion would be helpful. And once again, the concept is kind of twofold. Is one, we've drafted a very broad policy and procedure that could continue to be used in the future. And then the second item is really our specific budget recommendations for this year, which are more restrictive than what the policy allows. The policy allows a process by which we develop these recommendations, but this year's recommendations are more restrictive to that. So it would be helpful to have a motion approving one or both of those that have been presented.
I can't hear. If we're going to talk about the rest of the travel policy related, that actually had additional comments. I thought we were just talking about the liaison issue.
We're talking about the liaison issue right now. So we'll get into the rest of that.
Okay. So did you want to do just a motion on
the liaison?
On the liaison, meaning this year's budget recommendations, which the liaison is really the key feature.
Right.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, I'd make a motion that the council appoints one representative to serve as a liaison to the League of California Cities.
Yeah. And that's specifically in reference to the non-Channel County events. Is that how we're defining?
I'm talking about statewide events.
Yeah, okay, statewide events. I'll second that.
Okay, with the exception of the annual conference.
With the exception of the annual conference, yes.
Okay, and I'm assuming that I've got consensus to be the liaison.
Yes, I didn't know that needed to be part of the motion.
Okay. All right. Okay, then we do have a motion, a second. And a second. Roll call.
Councilmember Costello.
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold.
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. Okay, then, Steve, why don't you do a very quick on the travel policy issue and the and see if we can't wrap that up.
Okay. And the intent of this, and this was drafted before we needed to get into some of the budget adjustments we had to make to address the budget shortfall. And the intent of this was more to develop a procedure for putting together requests consistent with the travel policy for the upcoming year. Then staff would develop a cost estimate for each of those requests and a total annual estimated cost. Then we did provide, but much broader than just the annual conference, but primarily related to league activities, we listed a number of kind of categories of activities or conferences or mostly league activities that we felt would be appropriate for those requests. But there's some categories that provide a little bit of flexibility, such as other travel involving specific city business that has been approved and deemed necessary by the city council. Wanted to specify clearly that unless it's a League of California Cities activity, a maximum of two members from the council can attend. The Brown Act doesn't necessarily apply to some of the League of California Cities activities. The City Council travel budget request would then be presented to the council for consideration. So I would basically put all your requests together, present it to you during the budget process, and then the council would go through and critique that and determine what's appropriate based on the funding level in that particular year. And then we have budget quarterly reviews, at which time, if another activity came up that was not budgeted, any council member would have an opportunity to bring up a request for consideration by the council to add to the budget.
Right, and the rest of this is pretty much boilerplate. What I'd like is some feedback on that. I took a look at this. I think it's reasonable. My own opinion is I think it's reasonable as a sort of a trial. Give it a shot, see if we need to fix it a little bit. But I need to hear from the rest of you as well on the travel policy overall.
I've got no objections to it. I have no objections to it.
I thought it was very reasonable. I thought there were enough options in here that if we came across something that was of incredible importance
into a budget resolution, and yes, there is that opportunity to change that. I'll give you an example. It's about a month and a half ago that there was a grant writing program that happened to be in Paso Robles. Real easy to attend, would have been relatively cheap compared to attending it in a lot of other locations. Now, maybe I could have identified that a year in advance, but that's the kind of opportunity that we may be precluding ourselves from here. So I have no problem with the budget. I think that's absolutely, but I'm not sure that I want to commit to the. I'd rather see us seeing a dollar amount of budget that we can request to spend, and if we needed for some reason go beyond that, then yeah, we'd have to come back for some sort of budget change. We don't have an unlimited budget, just like nobody else has an unlimited budget. So I'd rather see a budget number that we then work within
and direct as the year goes on, rather than have to commit to a specific event a year in advance.
Well, I guess I'm not reading it that way. If you look at item 6, it says any changes and or additions to items approved in the City Council travel budget may be requested by placing an item under City Council items on the City Council agenda and or during review of the quarterly budget issue.
Okay, I'll just read item number 5. Is during the budget review process, City Council travel budget requests shall be presented to the City Council for consideration. So we're actually going to decide what we're going to do. Now, yes, we can change that through a council action. I just don't think we should have to go through a council action to change it, is all I'm saying.
Well, it's not so much of a – I don't see it as a council action as I do just sort of consensus. Because if you look at reality, I see that's why number 6 – I think that's why number 6 was put in there. Correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but, you know, on your workshop in Paso Robles, they usually come out with those things, 45 days in advance or 2 months in advance. Come to our workshop. Here's the registration. Here's the flyer. When one of us gets one of those things and we have a burning desire to go, you know, we get to Steve and we put it under City Council member items and we burn a copy for everybody and we say, hey, this is what I want to do.
Okay. And like I say, on a trial basis, I'm willing to look at this. I just sort of see it as being somewhat problematic, you know, particularly if maybe there's going to be a disapproval. But, you know.
I guess the way I was looking at it is we're basically allocating to a large degree, in my mind, the money to go to the annual League of Cities event. And I personally am considering banking that, if you will, this year. Because should we maybe be almost having just a kind of a budget for each council member for travel that would cover basically this the one big event? And then more or less, unless it's something that's just kind of crazy, often left field, that has nothing really to do with business, city business, but let the council... And I would probably say that probably would be a little more flexible. I see this as having enough flexibility that, and
I'm not saying it's undoable, but if our goal is to, I'm going to say control this expense, what we're actually saying is that any time you can come back to council, and with council's approval, exceed the budget. You know, I mean, and granted, technically we could do that any time, but I'm just saying it's problematic. If you think about this, what if somebody's up against their budget, and they want to go one more event, and they come back here, you know, are we really going to say no to $200 or something?
Well, we're all stewards of the budget, and so I think what each of us are going to have to do is our own soul-searching, if you will, to make a determination as to whether or not that's something – if we all know the condition of our budget, and so our decision to go or not go has to be based on the fact that that experience – and the information brought back to the city is going to outweigh the budget impact. And that's essentially what we have to do. Our responsibility tonight is to have some form of a travel budget policy in place for the council. That's what we have to have. And to be in compliance with AB 1234. And I think we all agree that what we have here is a basic framework, something that we can utilize and perhaps evaluate at the end of a given time and see how it works or doesn't. If it doesn't, then it's our responsibility to go back and fix our policy. So that's how I see this. I we can wordsmith this to death, but I think once it hits the ground and we start using it, then we're going to find our own way through it, and it will continue to be a framework. If it's not, then we'll. You know, we'll go back.
I just say that far from wordsmithing, and I was looking to simplify it to be just a dollar amount, period. And I understand where you're coming from and that we actually want to have, as a council, have consensus and input as to whether any of these experiences are worthwhile. And there's going to be whatever feedback there is on that. So I understand that, but I just thought it'd actually be simpler to have a dollar amount. I'm more than
some literature. But I feel that I would be more beneficial going to this conference and this conference for less money, perhaps, and bringing that information back to the council. I mean, if he made that request tomorrow under this policy, I'm not going to say no.
And I understand that can happen. I don't have any objection to going forward. I just, like I say, it would be a lot simpler to do it as a cash amount.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
We all know there's an awful lot of useful information at the League of California Cities presentations. When I was on the planning commission, I went to the Planners Institute, and I requested the city sponsor me to the Planners Institute when I was on the city council. And so I want to make sure that this looks broad enough to me to cover what I did last year and to bring back some useful information that I can use to make better decisions. Specifically, D, one additional program, program that provides training on specific issues relative to the city of Rio Grande. Every doggone thing that I go to has several issues that are useful. So I would think that if I wanted to go to the Planners Institute, for instance, as well as some others, it might be a possibility based on D. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm okay.
But once again, these are just listed on things that you'd like to identify and recommend at the beginning of the process to the mm-hmm. council in terms of the following year, and then it's up to the council. We will compile that, present that to the council with the cost, and then leave it up to the council itself to determine your budget for travel for the next year.
Okay. All right. Any other comments on this travel policy? Do we have sort of consensus that we'll give it a shot and see what happens? All right. You need a motion on this? I guess we should probably adopt it, right? Okay. Who wants to do that?
Mr. Mayor, I move we adopt the City Council travel budget policy enclosed as attachment one in the agenda tonight.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Well, that was an easy one. All right, we'll move to item 12, City Council Reports. Slocog canceled their last meeting. The RTA met on Phoenix. He's actually originally from California. Worked in Long Beach, the Long Beach Transit system, and then relocated to Phoenix and is coming back to California. And he's a very bright guy, very articulate, and I think he'll do well. Sand District met again the last week when I was on vacation. Councilmember Guthrie attended that meeting, right? And we'll give that report. We did. I don't think I gave this information, but Councilmember. Ed. It's either late or I'm getting old.
It's actually quite early.
Council member, it's generally getting late for me. Council member Arnold and I did meet with a consultant along with Steve and Don Spagnola. We have come up with what we think is a very good alternative to Briscoe Halcyon. The numbers seem to work. They're going back and taking care of a little bit of artwork with regard to some channelization of one of the streets branch. And then they're coming back with a drawing. Our next step is to meet with COG representatives, get their input, and then before we meet with Caltrans, we want to bring it back to the council and make sure that all of you are up to speed on it, but our meeting with COG is simply to get their feedback and hopefully their support, and also if we need to make any fine tuning as a result of that meeting, we can make it before we bring it back to the council to get all of you to sign off on it. But it's looking probably better than any alternative that that we've come up with previously, and I think overall it should be relatively inexpensive. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and hope that that continues to work. In the other category, let's see. I think Rob and I were at this morning, we were at a Board of Supervisors meeting on a buffer zone, issuing that until November. So we'll continue to track that and make sure that that precedent as it relates to our own ag policies is hopefully not established by something that the board does. And that pretty much wraps it up for me, and we'll go to Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. I attended the South County Youth Coalition. I have nothing relevant to report from that meeting. I missed the Water Resources Advisory Committee meeting, but there, probably everybody else has this this email also, but there's a couple of links for grant opportunities. I'll pass it on to staff so they can get that to Don, and maybe I'll bank a little time for something later.
Okay. Councilmember Costello.
I attended the Zone 3 board meeting last Thursday, and pretty much the operation of Lopez continues very well. Lake level is at 70%. Quagga mussel infestation inspections continue going well. The habitat conservation plan continues to churn along at a glacial speed. And we're hoping to have some sort of feedback fairly soon. We've got the federal people to commit to a time frame where they will give us an answer. I believe the correct word would be soon. That's about it. APCD meets tomorrow. We haven't met for 2 months. Tomorrow is the regularly scheduled meeting. I do want to mention that as of today, the smoke advisory from the wildfires for the county has been lifted, which is a good thing. Tomorrow we will be looking at next year's budget, and everything is fairly straightforward on that. Fire Oversight Committee, of course, we had the report today, and we've updated the and continued the agreement to continue sharing our chief and the battalion chief. And I'm very pleased with how the cooperation continues to go well between all parties involved for that. We have not had a Fire Consolidation Oversight Committee meeting for a year, probably, so there's nothing to report on that. And that's my report.
Got a quick question, Joe. I happened to catch a piece of the Zone 3 meeting, I think, on Channel 21.
Being able to draft water out of the creek and not pay for it. And the issue was raised to, well, what exactly are we talking about? And the issue is going to be continued for more study. Because the legal opinion from counsel was that there are probably more pitfalls involved in pursuing that than not, and just letting things continue as they are. The downstream users do have rights to the water, but that's not completely clarified as to exactly what they are. So that's going to be studied, and we'll have a further report at the next meeting, I believe.
Okay. Thanks. Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I'll start with the Sand District meeting. I think probably because we missed the council meeting that you probably didn't give the report that the budget was approved, but that would be a separate deal.
Yeah.
Okay. They continue to work on the digester. They expect to be done in the next 30, 45 days. There's a major project that they did in-house. It's going to come in well under budget. In addition, they've started the cogeneration, which was a part of their major budget project that started last year, but it's continuing this year. So we're looking at that coming online relatively soon. We did the one of the progress payments on that. One area that is of some concern is that there's a six-year-old violation, which now Water Resources Control Board has now, and I guess in trying to clean up a lot of their old stuff, has decided to come back and suggest a fine for. It would be the first fine. It's a relatively small amount of money. I think it was $6,000 or something. It's a relatively very small fine, but it's would be the first time that the Sand District has been fined in its existence. So it's kind of a point of pride, I think, to get that cleared up. But I did read about it in the paper. It turns out this is something. I think there's 8,000 or 9,000 or 10,000 of these out there, and the Water Resources Board is looking at collecting a little money on all of them, maybe. It goes all the way back to 2001, I believe.
That tell you anything about the condition of the state budget?
Yeah, I'm sure that that's at least part of it, and you know, so at any rate, that is going on. That is certainly a concern for staff, but the plant continues to run and is in excellent shape, and are moving forward with a lot of major projects that are in this year's budget. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for pinch hitting on that. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The IWMA canceled again to do it to go through. Let's say there's no doubt in my mind about the security of the plant. If they did that with the airplanes, one, it would take you 2 hours to get through, but you would definitely never see any problems on the planes. They take it very serious. Very, very professional group of people out there. And I would suggest that anyone who wants to learn more about the plant, while you can't get in it, they do have their information center over on Ontario Road. And we met there, and you get a chance to see how the plant was built and everything. And let's say it alleviated a lot of my fears. So it was worth attending. Thank you.
I did want to mention one thing about the EVC. Mike Manchik was at our mayor's meeting that Morro Bay hosted two Fridays ago, and apparently the EVC is going to be involved in some sort of a comprehensive airport study to try and deal with our loss of service. And the only thing that we requested was that they connect with the COG, because obviously that's an issue that's important to the Council of Governments as well. So we want to make sure that they're not going in two different directions, and that they team up on whatever study they're going to do. But we're obviously concerned with American Eagle pulling out and Delta as well. And so I know the COG's priority is to try and look at ways in which we might work towards securing the service that we do have. And It certainly just isn't us. We found out that they're pulling out of a lot of airports that are even a little bit larger than we are. But the irony of it is they're going into other airports that are even more remote and smaller than we are. So it's hard to follow their logic. But anyway.
I did see that on the agenda for tomorrow, so I'll make sure that I reconvey your thoughts on that.
Okay.
And that's all I have.
All right. Thank you. Item 13, City Council Member Items. Any?
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
In light of the information that was brought to us at the beginning of the meeting by Holly Ziegler in terms of the Mankins Acceleron oil well exploration, and the fact that there is an informational meeting or a meeting on July 31st, 2008.
I knew that you were starting to get questions about this, and we will be attending that workshop, in which time we'll have more accurate information. So I think at this point we will be giving you some background information, and we'll attend the meeting and then continue to keep you up to date and make a recommendation whether we think any council action is necessary.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Any other council member items? City manager items?
No.
Okay.
Not now.
Council communication?
A couple things. Joe mentioned the meeting on the 31st. Bob Lund mentioned to me that there is also an informational meeting at the Portuguese Hall the 24th, a couple days from now at 7 p.m. So I'm going to try to be there and just see. I don't know if it's a pro or con or what it is, against or for, or what it is, but meeting on the 24th at 7, and then the 31st at 6 at the Regional Center. The other thing is the Historical Society has gone to great expense to hire a historical consultant to try to get the Paulding History House on the state register. I think it would be a great benefit to the city. It would help the society fulfill its mission of preserving a history. And if we get it on the California Register, we get one of the Brown Freeway signs out and help other people interested in history find their way off the freeway and onto into the village and so on. So I distributed through Mary this information that you have that might help you write a letter. All letters will be appreciated, And then we got I got an email, which I also made a copy of for all of you, from Jane Line, the president of the society, with just a few more specifics. So in writing your letter, you've got some instructions, helpful hints here and here. And then if you have any further questions, you can call Jane or call me or call or email Cynthia Thompson, who is the consultant. And the letters should go in the next week or two to Cynthia.
Are these extras?
Those? Yes. And that's it. That would be I think it would be a real good thing for the community and the village and to hopefully make that California Register.
Yeah. Okay, any other council communication? You got one? We'll take one. Staff communication?